Times have been tough for evergreens in Iowa lately. Already stressed by various blights and diseases, last year's drought left a lot of evergreens looking pretty brown. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh is here. He'll give us an update on the state of evergreens in Iowa. We'll get some tips on what to plant and how to protect your evergreen trees that are still alive. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here, and he and Mark will answer your questions about the plants and trees in your yard, garden, and life. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will join us in a few minutes to answer questions. We're going to start the hour with DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Good morning.
And we're going to talk about evergreen trees. And it seems like right now, anytime you look at a row of evergreen trees in Iowa, you've got a pretty good shot of seeing some brown. There are a lot of evergreens that have taken a hit over the last year.
Yeah, there are a few trees that look kind of stressed or maybe even dead. The one point I want to make, though, they're not always all the same. Arborvitae seems to be the worst right now. But people will call me and say, why are all the evergreens dying? And first question or first statement I make is, well, they're not all dying, and it kind of depends on the species. There's a lot of species with the evergreens that have some issues, but not every single one has an issue at this point. The thing we have to remember in Iowa is there's only a couple native evergreens in Iowa, actually a white pine, Eastern red cedar, and balsam fir. Balsam fir is just a little peak clear up in the northeast Iowa. White pine actually is mostly in northeast Iowa where it's native. An eastern red cedar, anywhere a bird can eat a cone and drop it along a fence row, you'll get a cedar in a pasture. But the thing we have to remember is, to be honest, and we've talked about this many times, is Iowa's really not a conifer state. We're kind of a deciduous forest, oak hickory, and our summers can get hot and dry, and that's not always the best environment for evergreens. So we've been planting evergreens for years and years, but when you get extremes like we had in 2008, we had too much moisture, and last year we had too dry.
We had too much moisture in 2010, too.
I mean, right.
We had some really
you can go
wet
to,
years, right?
2008, 2009, and 2010, we had some springs that were really wet. And so all those things can add up. And sometimes one thing doesn't kill it, but it can cause stress, and then other things can add up. But I would say in general, since probably mid-summer last year and through the winter and this spring, arborvitae kind of throughout the state, we've been getting a lot of calls. There's many different varieties of arborvitae. There's some that get 20 to 25 feet that are kind of wider. There's some that are more upright or commoner. And those commoner ones, the narrow ones, seem to be, at least in general, the ones I see the most that are dying. We may sometimes see the whole windbreak die, or we're getting a lot of patterns where we see three dead trees, three live ones, two dead ones, some more live ones, and then a couple dead ones. And right now, looking at it, we think the extremes have something to do with it, have put stress on. And there's some root rots that there's one called Phytophthora that is fairly common, but we found a little bit. Actually, the interesting thing, this phenomenon with arborvitae is in Illinois, Wisconsin, Indiana, Minnesota, and parts of Missouri. So anytime I see that, I tend to tie it sometimes more to weather extremes, or this fatal word we use, complex, where we can't say it's this or just this. It's multiple things that have come together, and then things start to happen.
Well, and arborvitae are incredibly popular for windbreaks and for privacy fences as well. And something that I've thought about a lot in the last couple of years, because I wanted a windbreak on my own property.
Correct.
I've looked at a lot of these. I see a lot that are planted extremely close together. Are we setting ourselves up for some problems by wanting a really dense barrier possibly planting them too close together?
That's a great question. Anytime you put plants real close together, the same species, they have the same needs. And they have the same growth requirements. So that can add to the stress a little bit. But the unique thing that's always been neat about arborvitae is they can handle that closeness. They don't, like if you put two pine trees together, a couple pine trees or even spruce, they will shade out each other and just, you know, in 10 or 15 years, you lose everything below and you've kind of lost your effect. The neat thing about arborvitae is they have some shade tolerance. They can grow fairly close together and keep that density and really give you a good screen. So that's why we've really liked them. I mean, their biggest downfall has been that they're deer candy. If you have deer, you're not going to have any branches up to 6 feet or as tall as that deer can get up because they like to eat them. But yeah, anytime you have plants that close, when you get these extremes, sometimes it can be worse. So that may have added to this, but they're a plant that can take that versus other species. That's why they've been such a good plant.
They're also a rapid growing plant. Does that indicate maybe a shorter lifespan?
Well, we tend to throw that in with like hardwoods and stuff when we talk about willow and cottonwood and some of those plants. I would say we're still probably averaging 40 to 60 years. And there's some, if you look in some of the old cemeteries, see, the thing is, what has happened, we've cultivated a lot of these varieties of arborvitae because of these different sizes. And sometimes you can even get golden globe or all kinds of different selections and varieties. And there is a native arborvitae. It's called northern white cedar. It's not native to Iowa, but up in the Minnesota and places like that, it is a native species. But when you start cultivating and splitting and doing all these things, sometimes you can lose that quality or survivability and run into challenges.
When you do find that you have a bunch of brown arborvitae on your property, what do you need to do?
They call those chipper bait, to be honest. If the thing is with arborvitae, if they're brown, they're probably dead, to be honest. And the challenge, a lot of these windbreaks, like I was saying, is not the whole thing is not dying. And we're getting a lot of questions on that is, well, if this is such a big problem, how come the whole thing doesn't die? And you can have different soil texture. You can have different water levels. You can have little microclimates within those rows and stuff that are causing those, some plants to be, even if you have a rise or difference in 2 feet in one area of the windbreak, that may be good or bad one way or the other for those plants. So all you can really do is take them out. Now, the big question is, do we come back with arborvitae? And at this point, I'm not ready to take arborvitae off the list. But I think we need some more time to really try to, again, we don't have a silver bullet here. There's a lot of other evergreen species with problems, and we can say it's this, this, this. We don't know what's going on, so we're going to need a little more time to figure it out before hopefully we're not going to take arborvitae off the list, and hopefully we see some tolerance or some resistance, like I said, in some of the older varieties in the cemeteries and stuff. Some of those are still looking pretty good. And some of the bigger varieties of the more native species look a little better. Again, it's the columnar and those. So hopefully in the next couple of years, we can kind of pinpoint. We have a forest health specialist in Des Moines, him and other states. They're digging and looking and taking samples, and they're working even with the Morton Arboretum in the Chicago area. This is something that's in the Midwest. This is a plant that's fairly common. This would be a huge hit if we every year it seems like we're talking about something else we lose. So we're not ready to give up. But if you have them, pretty much you're going to have to take those out, and what you have left is what you have left. And so you might have to look at some other – it's going to be hard just to plant in that spot. So you might have to move over and put a new row of something. Maybe you put shrubs or bigger evergreens. We still have white pine does fairly decent. People don't like it, but I will mention Eastern Red Cedar. It is a good evergreen as far as a windbreak, even though it's kind of a weed, or some people think it spreads, and it does. And then Norway spruce is another. Concolor fir in some places, not all. But our list is not that long for good evergreens. It's a challenge.
So there are already stores that are trying to fill a new need to replant a lot of these windbreaks. I recently saw a big truckload of arborvitae being sold at a box store. And these were really tall arborvitae, probably 6 feet tall in fairly small pots. Are there things that we need to look out for if we're thinking, A, we might want to take advantage of an opportunity to put a few of these in, or we need to replace some? When you're looking for a good hardy specimen, what do you need to look for?
Well, the one thing there's one species I would recommend that you don't replace with, and that is Colorado blue spruce. I'm still seeing Colorado blue spruce sold in a lot of places, and we've talked about it many times, all the different diseases, all the different threats. We continue to see those. If you plant blue spruce, you're planting a problem. There's going to be issues in the next 10 to 20 years, almost guaranteed.
No matter how pretty it is.
No matter how pretty it is, there's going to be issues with that. So anytime you buy a plant, the bigger the root system, in balance with the top, the better. So if I have a huge tree, but just, you know, a gallon bucket, that's probably not in the greatest balance. I don't have a great root system support, especially with evergreens. You have an evergreen that you're going to stick out in the spring and the summer, and it's going to get warm. You've got this huge catcher's mitt up there that just wants to suck moisture, and the wind's going to blow it, and you've got this little root system that support it. No matter how much water you pour to it, that plant has a good chance to dry out. I'd rather see a big root system and a smaller trunk or smaller tree. And we say that with any tree when we're looking at planting and stuff. You know, we're into this thing that bigger is better. But a lot of times if we take like even a shade tree and buy a 5 or 6 footer with a good balanced root system, it's going to catch up with the one that we got that was 10 foot that had a huge, you know, still had a good root system, but there's a lot of shock to that tree. So bigger is not always better. And so you want some balance. If we have a 6 foot evergreen, we'd hope that's a couple gallon pot, or maybe even 5 or 6, 7 gallons, much bigger pot to support that tree.
All right. So even if it looks like a great bargain,
it may not be. That's right.
All right. Well, we are going to take a short break, and we will get back to this conversation in a moment. With me, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. He is here today to answer all of your tree questions. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will be joining us in a moment to answer your questions as well. The number to call is 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk or post your question on our Facebook page. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh and Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. Hello, Richard. All right, we seem to be having a bit of a problem with that, but we will get to the phones, and 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Richard will be along shortly, and we'll start with a tree question, though, for you, Mark. Steve is on the line from Erie, Illinois. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a pin oak that is showing some dead branches on the lower trunk, lower portion of the tree, and just questioning when to trim these off, and if I have to prep the ends of it after I cut them.
Steve, that's a great question. Preferably, if you can stand the dead branches, I honestly would wait until probably late October, early November to take those off. Now, if you just can't wait, if they're dead branches and you're not wounding anything, you're minimizing the potential with problems, but you could treat that with latex paint. But the problem is when we prune and stuff, sometimes we might nick the trunk, nick another branch, and then open that up, potential for the beetle to carry the fungus that carries oak wilt to that tree. So to be really conservative, I would wait. But if you can't wait, then you want to treat that wound immediately with latex paint to try to discourage any transfer. But if it's truly a dead branch, you're minimizing the possibility. But again, there's always that potential to wound something live.
Well, I can definitely live with that. Waiting till fall, late fall, to do that. Is there something killing those? Is it something I should be looking for?
Well,
identify maybe.
That's another great question. On the thing you got to remember about pin oaks is they're not really tolerant to shade, and they're very dense. And so what happens on those lower limbs a lot of times is the middle limbs actually shade out the lower limbs. And the other thing is, if we tip pin oaks, which we have a tendency to do sometimes, because if it's with pin oaks, if you have a branch at 20 feet, sometimes that will droop down to 10 or even lower, and we have a tendency to kind of tip the edges to get that out of the yard or so we don't get hit in the head. Well, when we do that, we're cutting off leaf material. And trees are very efficient in the sense that if that branch isn't producing enough photosynthate, enough food through photosynthesis, it kills it. So a lot of times those branches are shutting down because the tree knows it's not doing the work. It's becoming a sink, so the tree actually shuts it off. And that's why if it tends to be on the low part and the lower part, that's really what's happening. Those branches are just generally getting shaded out, and that's pretty common on pin oaks. Now, if you're getting death higher up in the tree on the tips and stuff, then I'm concerned that I might have something else going on.
Okay. Well,
right.
Very good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Have a great day. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks
a lot for your call, Steve. And now I can say hello to Richard. Hi, Richard.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you for being here today, Richard. And we will get to, I think, a question for you next. Barb is on the line from West Des Moines. Hi, Barb.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
My rhubarb has bolted already, and somebody told me that after it bolts, you can't use it.
Not true. You can use it. It's edible. What you want to do, though, is as soon as you see those flower stalks forming, cut them off or pull them out. Because if they are allowed to fully develop, that weakens the plant, and so you have a smaller crop.
Okay. So it is usable, and as long as I keep the bolts out of it, I'm okay.
You're fine. Right.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Barb. And next up, let's go to Scott on the line in Polk City. Hi, Scott.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What's your question?
Well, more of a comment than a question. We planted a Colorado blue spruce 22 years ago. I've never done anything real special with it. Last year, my wife was saying we should water it, but, you know, it already had 21 years of growth on it, and I couldn't see that the limbs were turning brown or that it looked diseased in any way, shape, or form, but earlier, one of your guests had said something about, oh, Colorado blue spruce, you're planting a problem. So is there anything I should be doing to, you know, or maybe I should be more proactive in making sure it stays as healthy as it can? Again, I haven't done anything, and it's healthy. It's like a condo for the birds, and the rabbits have taken residence up underneath it here recently.
Well, I'm the culprit, Scott. This is Mark. I'm the one that said that. And in general, we are seeing a lot of problems with Colorado spruce across the state, and we have for probably the last 5 to 10 years. And actually in that 08, 09, and 10, when we had a lot of moisture, there was a number of disease issues. Your tree, what you're saying right now is great. I'm glad to hear that you haven't had any issues. But there is a couple different needle casts that kind of start at the bottom of the tree, and then they tend to start on the inner branches and work their way out towards the tips. There's one called Rhizosphera needle cast and one called Stigmina. What I would do is get online and Google spruce needle cast and then Google Iowa State, and there's some good information on what to look for. So over the years, you can kind of look for any symptoms, and they're not the best, but there are some preventative fungicides that if you start to see the problems, you can kind of slow it down. But your tree is getting to the age that you might start to see some problems. If it's isolated, though, and it's more open and there's good wind movement and it's not in a windbreak, those trees often are going to be healthier and have a better chance. It's when trees are maybe on a north side or they don't get as much sunlight, or they're in a windbreak, they tend to be more susceptible to these problems. So the fact that you have healthy one is great. And I hope it goes another 20 years with no problems. And hopefully I'm still here. You can call and say, hey, Mark, this is Scott from Polk City. That tree still looks good.
But I'm the one guy in Iowa with
that's
a healthy,
right. But
healthy
but in general, we and Richard can, you know, we get tons of calls on this. But that's the disease that's probably the most common, that needle cast, that you're going to want to watch for now that you're getting into that 20, 25-year age.
All right, Scott, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, Carl's on the line in Palo. Hi, Carl.
Well, hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. See, I planted some oak trees. They were about 2 feet, stock. And now the tops and many of them are died off. The leaves are growing out to the bottom. Should I just abandon those or hope for the best?
Is this Carl along the river? Last name with an
hi,
H?
Mark, how
yeah,
are
how are you? I know this gentleman. So, Carl, what I would probably do is give him another year or so. That's not a good sign that the top died out, but sometimes they'll, if the root system's still good, you'll get a good sprout from the root, and you may be able to work with that tree. So I would try to get them through this summer, see how they come, and sometimes they'll put, you know, just above ground or just about ground level, they'll put on a new sprout, and if that's something you can work with, I would probably try to work with it and see how it works out. But that happens sometimes, depending on the conditions or whatever, the top will die. But I've seen some trees do that, and then if they have a decent root system, you can still work with them a little bit.
Thanks a lot, Mark.
All right.
Thanks for your call, Carl. Next up, let's go to Jay on the line in Colfax. Hi, Jay.
Hello. How y'all doing today?
Good. What's your question?
I have two of them, actually. One's real quick. I got a crabapple tree in my yard that this year has one branch with white flowers on it. And I wonder it's never done that before. And it's been, oh, man, that tree's been there as long as I have. So I wonder what might have caused that or why I would do that.
So go ahead, Richard.
I was going to say it sounds like a sport or a mutation. And that does happen on occasion on certain plants where for some reason the genetic code is different. And then that branch or that shoot has a different colored flower. So it does happen on occasion.
Okay.
It sounds kind of cool. Does it look neat, Jay?
Yeah, it's just one branch has bright white flowers and the rest are all the purple crabapple tree flowers. My second question, my mom has got this white flower that comes up in her backyard. It's a little flower that's got leaves that look almost like grass. And once you mow the yard, you can't actually tell it from the grass. It comes up first thing in the spring, and it's got just a little white taproot to it. There's nothing of a root system to it. But it just comes up thick through the yard. They got a little bit of timber down at the bottom of the yard. And I was wondering if you might know what it is or how I could find out what it is.
Well, what you could do is take some very clear, sharp digital photographs and send those to Iowa State.
Okay.
Specifically to Hortline, which is HORTLINE at IASTATE. .edu. Now,
okay.
My first guess might be if it's got grass-like foliage and small white flowers, possibly a Star of Bethlehem comes to mind, which is onion-type plant, or wild onion or wild garlic.
Okay, because there's no real smell to it, and it's their backyard, and it's not growing in any of the neighbors' yards. It's kind of pretty when it's blooming because it's just a real small, real white little flower. All righty.
So if you could maybe pull one up or dig one up, basically intact, showing the flowers, the foliage, the roots, or the bulb, and then take some good, sharp photographs, that should be sufficient.
Okay. I will do that. Thank you.
All right, Jay. Thanks a lot for your call. And next up, we'll go to Rick in Iowa City. Hi, Rick.
Morning.
Hi, what's your question?
Yes, it's on lilac bushes We had one that got hit by the tornado and came back big time. And I'm wondering, we're thinking about putting it for kind of privacy and shade on the other side of our lot. Is it too late in the year to transplant? And also, if it isn't, how large of a chunk can I try to dig up and transplant and have it grow?
Well, as far as transplanting, it would be difficult right now. Here in central Iowa, right now they're beginning to bloom. So they're basically leafed out, they're blooming. Doing it right now would be very, very difficult. The best time to do that would be early spring before they begin to leaf out or bud out. So basically late March, early April possibly. And lilacs typically sucker. The common lilac does. So you can actually just dig up some of those suckers and move them if you wish.
How long would it take those to get to any height where it might be like for shade or for privacy?
Yeah. It probably would be several years, like 3, 4, or 5 years before they're really a nice specimen. If you start with small suckers or shoots, and they may not bloom probably for maybe 5, 6 years.
What's the tallest suckers I might be able to transplant that would still thrive?
Oh, you can, if you allow them to grow, you can allow them to grow to be maybe 2 feet high, 3 feet high, and then cut them all, dig them up at that point.
Yeah, we already have a bunch of those.
Okay,
very much.
All right, Rick, thanks for your call. And Richard, I mean, you could still buy a lilac at a garden center.
Absolutely,
right now.
Right. So you can buy those at garden centers. They're typically either in containers or balled and burlapped, and have a much bigger plant.
All right. Here's a question from Matt on email. I've got 2 grapevines that I planted last spring. While the plants didn't grow much last year, each plant has 3 to 4 canes coming off the main vine, and I'd like to prune them back to 2. I'm thinking that pruning them back would concentrate the vine's growth into the 2 remaining canes. I know that I've missed the best time to prune, but can I still prune them back now?
Well, I would probably do it. Ideally, we would have 1 trunk or 1 stem. You could have 2, but you definitely don't want 3. And so I would probably remove at least 1, possibly 2. And if they have a trellis in place, I would cut them off just above that upper wire.
Okay. Let's get back to the phones. Joe is on the line in Cedar Falls. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I have a question. 20 years ago, planted a natural prairie in our backyard, and at that same time put in 3 sumac plants that were allegedly not going to sucker or send out shoots. And the prairie was very beautiful for a number of years, and then slowly over time the sumac started expanding, and to the point where now it's just really out of control, and I'd like to just get rid of it, if there's a way to kill it, the sumac, short of digging up the prairie and in the backyard.
Well, I'll start, Richard. There's a couple things that you can do, Joe, to help. I mean, the first thing to probably beat it back is you're probably going to have to look at cutting and treating those with a registered herbicide, such as Roundup or something like that, to try to keep them from sprouting. Sumac's one that continues that. That's its nature. It likes to spread, and it likes to move. So cutting and treating, to me, I actually see better success by doing that kind of late summer, early fall, though. As things start to move down into the root system, you get a better root kill if you do that. And then the other thing you can do is, if you're right in town, you may not be able to do this, but if you're on the edge, look at a prescribed fire every few years to keep that minimized, to promote that grass, and to keep some of that woody vegetation out is probably your best bet. So if you can't burn, though, cutting and treating is probably going to be your best bet.
Well, we are in town, but we burn it every year.
Okay.
And have every year, but that still doesn't do it. So do you actually cut it down at the ground and put, say, some Roundup on what's left of the stalk?
Correct. You actually cut it flush to the ground, and you would treat that stub immediately with Roundup. And you'd want to use the woody rate, which is going to be a higher percent than usually the 1 to 2%. It's usually a much higher percent of that. And you look on the label, and it'll give you the woody control rate would be the way to go. But you want to treat that stump immediately after cutting.
Okay.
This is probably going to be a long-term project.
Correct.
Yeah. Probably 2 or 3 years, unfortunately.
No, I can believe that, yeah.
So.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Joe. And we'll get to at least the first part of an email question here. This is from Nick in Chicago. He says, how far apart do corn varieties need to be to not cross-pollinate? He has several heirloom varieties, and he doesn't want them to cross-pollinate.
We would typically say at least 250 feet.
All right. And then he says space is limited, so I'm guessing that's not possible. And he says, are there steps I can take later in the season?
There's one other way to do it is to plant them at different times so they tassel at different times. So you could do that.
All right. We will take a short break. We'll get back to take more questions in just a moment. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Horticulture Day today. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh and ISU Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron, here to answer your questions at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we had a post earlier on our Facebook page from Christine. She says, I live in Dubuque, and I've heard that there's some type of pest coming to kill all our ash trees. Should I be worried? Is there anything I can do to protect the trees? And of course, we've talked quite a lot about emerald ash borer. What's the latest, Mark?
The latest is it's still in Almaquy County. It hasn't been found anywhere else in the state yet. That doesn't mean that it's not there. There are a couple of options for Christine. There are labeled, recommended insecticides that if a person wants to prevent this problem, they can start treating their tree now if they want to. Usually treat in the spring. Most of it has to be done commercially. There is some stuff, quote, over the counter for if you have trees that are 8 inches and less, so a smaller tree that you could buy. But if it's bigger than that, you're probably looking at it being commercially treated. In general, Iowa State, DNR, and others are recommending that if you are going to treat, that you might consider waiting until it's within 10 to 15 miles of your general area. Right now, it's in the Lansing, New Albion area, up in northeast in Almaquy, so she's still not quite in that.
There's a little bit of a buffer zone.
There is a little bit of buffer there. A lot of trees in between. Again, you're always at risk. So if someone tells me I don't want to take any risk and I'm in western Iowa, they could start treating right now. But they could treat for 20 years before it gets there. Or the challenge that we run into, usually when we find the pest, it's been in the area for 5 to 6 years already. So it could be in this area. It could be in your neighborhood, wherever you are. So you have to decide what that risk is. The thing is, most of these treatments you have to inject. So that's something you would have to do every year or every couple years. That's wounding the tree. You have to decide. A lot of communities are going different routes.
They're taking them down.
Well, some are, but there's actually some areas like in Chicago and other communities and some even in Iowa that are considering to treat. They're using a they're actually going to treat some areas of their neighborhoods or their towns, and in other areas they're going to remove. Some are waiting for it to happen, then they're going to remove. Some are actually proactively taking the stress trees out. I mean, this is a big issue. When you have a large tree, a city may, it may cost them $600 to a couple thousand dollars per tree to remove that tree. If you are like the city of Cedar Rapids and you have 15,000 ash trees that are in the streets alone as street trees, that's a lot of money. So you have to look at this very seriously and kind of spread it out. People have individual trees in their yard. I have an ash tree in my yard. It's 26 inches in diameter. It's a large tree. The other thing with green ash and some of those, their lifespan is probably 40 to 70 years, somewhere in there. my tree is already in that age. I've decided that I'm going to enjoy it as long as I can and save the money to remove it when it comes time. But someone else may have a tree that they say, I do not want to lose it. Then there are registered chemicals. Iowa State has a nice publication that kind of lays out the chemical options for treatment.
But you are not recommending planting ash trees right now.
I'm not, but with that said, I will have to admit, our state nursery, we are now selling ash again as kind of a filler tree in plantations and stuff like that, knowing that those trees may die in 10, 15, 20 years because some people want to use them as a plant as kind of a tree that's going to work together with other trees, grow fast, fill in areas, but knowing that it may die later. As a street tree and stuff, that is something we're definitely not recommending.
All right. Let's get back to the phones. James is on the line next from Des Moines. Hi, James.
Well, first off, I wouldn't eat raspberry-covered insects, let alone insects. I had a pine tree in my backyard, and it had a copper rod driven into it. And I planted a pine tree, and it's really prospering where I have it in my new location. Do I need to worry about that copper rod?
So there's a copper rod in the pine tree itself?
Driven into the trunk, yes.
From the sense of it causing any harm to the tree, no, I would not be worried that that's going to cause an issue with the health of that tree. The only thing is to make sure that you know that that rod's there in case there's ever has to be a removal or anything like that as far as safety with the chainsaw. Or if you sell that property, you may want to pass that along to the next owner so they know, so there's no risk there. But as far as copper being in the tree, I don't see any risk to that causing health issues to the tree.
Is there any benefit, though?
No, not that I know of.
All right. When can I trim my densiform yew? They suffered badly last year, and I want to know when I can start shaping them and feed them.
Well, as far as pruning them, it would have been better to prune them maybe 2 weeks ago. Right now, they're just beginning to break bud and grow. I guess you could still do that if you want to do that within the next few days. You could also prune them later on in summer, like in July or August. So you have your options.
All right. And let's move on to an email. This is from Jackie in Solon. A vegetable garden question. In regard to growing squash, should different kinds of squash be planted far apart or can they be planted right beside each other? And, she has a couple follow-ups, so I'll let you get that one first.
There's no problem planting different types of squash near each other as far as acorn squash, butternut squash, whatever, because even though they may cross-pollinate, it doesn't affect the fruit. It affects the seed.
Okay.
So the fruit will be fine.
So as long as she's not saving seeds and expecting them
to
breed true. Mm-hmm. All right, she also wants to know how far apart cucumbers should be from squash.
That's not a problem. Just make sure they have plenty of space. Squash, especially the winter squash, are huge plants. So just make sure there's plenty of space. I would say at least 6 to 8 feet so they don't kind of take over the cucumbers.
Okay. And she also wants to know if squash can be planted in the same area year after year.
Well, the problem with planting the same thing in the same area year after year is that over time, a disease may appear and it may become more and more severe. And typically your pathogens can survive in the soil for maybe 2 or 3 years. So that's the reason that we rotate, is to kind of discourage disease problems.
All right. Let's get back to the phones. This is Brenda now from Clear Lake. Hi, Brenda.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
What's your question?
I have some very large pine trees in my yard. They were here before we moved here, so I don't know what kind of pines they are, but taller than the house. The one in the front last couple of years started kind of dying from the bottom branches, and it's worked its way up to the entire tree. This spring is totally, totally dead. And so we thought we should have it taken down. But now I'm noticing in the backyard, we have one of our tall pines looks to be dead from the middle to the top. The bottom part is still alive. So is there any way to save these trees? Are they diseased? Do I need to them out before they affect my other trees, or is it too late anyway?
Well, the first thing, Brenda, is to find out exactly what kind of tree they are, if they're spruce, an actual pine, or a fir, or whatever. And then actually try to diagnose what's wrong. And in your case, probably the best thing would be to try to take some digital pictures and then some samples and take those into your county extension office where they can assist you in sending some samples possibly into the disease clinic in Ames to try to figure out what is actually going on. The thing is, if they're not all the same in your yard, if the ones having problems are different than maybe some of the other evergreens, there may not be an issue. If they are the same, there could be an issue. So it's really critical to really find out what the problem is first. So I would work with your county extension office and maybe even go into them first and ask them what they need and then work with them to get some samples sent to the disease clinic down in Ames to try to diagnose the problem.
All right, Brenda, good luck with that. Bob is on the line next in Muscatine. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, good morning. I was talking to a friend of mine in Brooklyn, and he was all gloom and doom about the Asian longhorn beetle, something that I was not familiar with. He says that they've got they're only allowing them to plant certain trees in the boulevards, and of course he's got the only tree that grows in Brooklyn. But is that proximate to Iowa at all, or is it something we shouldn't be worried about yet?
That's a good question, Bob. And actually, when you say Brooklyn, you're talking about Brooklyn, New York. And
yeah, assuming, New York.
Yes,
Brooklyn,
yeah. We'll let the listeners know that it's not Brooklyn, Iowa. The Asian longhorn beetle has been in Iowa, or not is not in Iowa. Has been in the United States for a number of years. Was actually introduced a number of years ago. And actually the closest to Iowa it has been a number of years ago, they actually found it in Chicago. And in that case, they actually removed a couple thousand trees in the Chicago area. One of the species that it likes is maple. It doesn't go after oak and some of the others as much, and ash and some of those, believe it or not, but it does like maples and quite a few other species. The kind of good thing about this pest compared to emerald ash borer and some of these others is it's rather large and it doesn't fly very far. So we can actually use removal of trees to try to slow that down. And in the Chicago area, they actually have claimed now, it's been over 5 years, that they basically eliminated the population in the Chicago area. But since then, it's in places like Massachusetts and now in Ohio, very bad, in the New York area. But it is a concern because like anything else that lives in wood, it can be transported. And usually the way these things get transported is like in pallets or material like that, that if there's any bark on it and that material's not treated and then it gets shipped to different places, different countries, different states, it can move. Or that's where we always talk about firewood. If Uncle Bob decides to bring firewood to the Memorial Day festivities in Brooklyn, Iowa, he could actually bring the Asian longhorn beetle. And we need to do the same in Iowa. If we're going to visit relatives anywhere in the United States, don't take your own firewood. We have some concerns with bur oak and other things. We could actually transmit problems in other states. But the Asian longhorn beetle, to really put it out there, is on our radar, something we're looking for, something we're concerned, because it is something that could be fairly devastating, similar to the emerald ash borer.
All right, Bob, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, we've got Dick in Dubuque. Hi, Dick.
Yeah, quick, thanks for call. Comment on my white pine howl. I always put a plug in for it. It's there are arborvitae growing up there, too, so it's another evergreen up in there, that unique environment. But the morels, I don't know the status. I haven't had much luck. There's some old, young wives' tales about they come with the lilac blossoms or the May apple blossoms. Is there any ecological point you can watch for the morels, other points that you guys know of?
Well, Dick, I'm a mushroom hunter myself, and I've been picking down in the Iowa City area since May 6th. And usually when the Dutchman breeches and some of those start coming up, that's when I start looking. And when the May apples get, somewhere between 6 and 12 inches tall, I start looking. And once they start spreading out, but I really start picking heavier this weekend. And I know in southern Iowa, they've been picking since late April, about April 30th, they started finding them in southern Iowa. So they're coming your way.
I've seen some pictures of some pretty big hauls this year.
I also have to say they've been very good. I've enjoyed them greatly. But I actually went out last night, found another 25 or so.
Wow.
I'm still finding grays, and in some spots starting to find a few yellows. So it does seem kind of dry in our area, and so if we had a little moisture this weekend, I think I'd probably go out next Tuesday or Wednesday again. But, yeah, they are out there. The vegetation's getting a lot taller, so you got to work a little harder. But if you want to get them, they're coming. But there is these phenology related to plants. There is some connections there when we talk about pests and different things too, and there are some timings when some of these different flowers out. I also hear usually when the leaves on the oaks are an inch or the size of a squirrel's ear, which is not an inch, but somewhere between a quarter inch to an inch, that timing is usually pretty close. But the one thing we've seen too is we're finding them on the south and west hillsides first because those are warmer, and then you'll start finding them on the north and east probably here in the next couple weeks.
All right, and looking for dead wood is kind of a sign?
If a person's starting, finding dead elm trees that died last year, it would be your prime target to start to look for those. If they've been dead for 2 years, sometimes you still might find some. But then you'll get some areas. I was in an area the other day, no elms. I found a lot of mushrooms. Sometimes there's just something about that soil, the aspect, different things like that. Those are the only other things I can tell you.
Right.
I have to keep the rest secret.
I was going to say, I'm certain that you're not sharing any kind of locations here. All right, let's get back to some email. This is from Carl. He says, I have a mature pin oak that lost a major lower limb a number of years ago. Where the limb was lost, there's a hole in the trunk, and I fear there's some rot going on. I haven't looked into the hole. It's pretty high up, but the other day I saw a squirrel come out of it. Should I fill the hole or just leave it?
Don't fill the hole. But I would probably have a certified arborist from the International Society of Arboriculture, which is a group that certifies arborists through testing and stuff, actually inspect that tree to see if it's safe. I mean, that tree could live a long time, but structurally, since it's hollow, it may have defects. It really depends on how much hollow and how much solid wood that you have outside that hollow area. So it's something, especially if it's close to a building, street, or somewhere, if it failed, it could be a problem. I would have it inspected to see if it's safe structurally.
All right, and our final question today, this is from Gary in Waukee. We have two 20-foot-tall purple-leaf cherry trees that each year produce more and more sucker growth, hundreds right now. Other than continuously cutting it off, what can be done? Please help.
Well, there's not an easy answer. Basically, you have two options. One is to simply go out there every year periodically and cut off the suckers. The other option is to destroy the tree. And to destroy the tree, you're going to have to cut it down. But before you remove the stump, definitely treat it with Roundup to destroy the root system. Otherwise, it will still keep on suckering, even though you've taken the tree down.
All right. Richard Giron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Mark Vitosh, thank you.
Thank you.
Happy hunting for mushrooms. DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had technical support today from Alyssa Weiss in Ames, and Alyssa has just graduated from Iowa State University. She will be leaving us, and she will be missed, but we are expecting great things. Thank you for everything, Alyssa, and good luck. I'm Charity Nebbe. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.